The Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Luke. Then the devil took Jesus up and showed him all the kingdoms of the world in a single instant. The devil said to him, "I shall give to you all this power and their glory, for it has been handed over to me, and I may give it to whomever I wish. All this will be yours if you worship me." Jesus said to him in reply, "It is written, 'You shall worship the Lord your God, and him alone shall you serve.'" The Gospel of the Lord. Please be seated. One thing we notice here is that Jesus allowed the devil to move him around, first here and then in the last temptation. And if he allowed this with regard to himself, then it should not surprise us if we find ourselves handled roughly, manhandled, if you will, roughly, whether it be by spiritual beings or the human ones that are around us. This second temptation is, on its face, about power. Jesus is offered all the kingdoms of the world. We are not offered all the kingdoms of the world. And yet, we may find in this temptation something that addresses generally the area of human relationships. For Jesus, there was the expectation in his people at that time of a Messiah who would be a very political figure, would be a mighty military leader, who would overthrow the Romans and establish a political kingdom. Jesus surely knew well that these were the expectations that surrounded him. Would he have felt any pressure to give in to those expectations? In addition, we know how much he loved people, how much he wanted to save people from sin, to relieve suffering. We know what his compassion was. Wouldn't this be a good way to help them? Seemingly instantaneous, just requiring a little compromise. If he were suddenly the king of all the kingdoms, wouldn't he be able to help people in the way that he wanted to, so quickly, so easily? And so we may begin to identify different sort of general threads of temptation that run through this that can connect to us. In the first place, there can be a temptation to try to control people, to force our own power and will upon them. Now, that might not be through the authority of being a king of a country, but it could be through being a boss, through being a parent, or, if we have other ways of doing it, simply of pulling those strings and pushing those buttons that allow us to manipulate, without ordinary power, someone else, to one way or another, to make someone else do our bidding, serve us. And we're not looking out for their good, but rather we're looking to see how can we make them to serve ours. Now, this first thread, truly we know, is against God's commandments. For Christ tells us that to love our neighbor as ourselves is the second commandment and very like the first. And then there's his famous golden rule, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And yet, even though this is so clearly against what our Lord asks of us, as those who have been created by him, baptized in him, given a share in his divine life, even though this is clear, how often have we done it nonetheless? How often have we done it in areas of sexuality or romantic relationships, in marriage, with a spouse, with children, or with parents or other families, family members, with employees, with customers, with some business who we know we can control because they need us to keep buying their product, with neighbors or friends, even with people at church right here. Jesus did not give in to this temptation. Do we? Or perhaps we can then identify a second thread where, like our Lord Jesus, we want to help people. We want to live out love for them. But we think, isn't this important enough and essential enough that when I see a little compromise that I could make in order to achieve it, and if I don't make that compromise with something that is not morally good, if I don't make that compromise, then this avenue that I see is blocked. Do we decide that it's worth the compromise, that we'll do just a little bit of evil because we can see the good that would follow? And yet the problem is not only the evil that we do, but does it turn out that even the good that we wanted to do gets spoiled? Because our compromise has taken us off track, so that the good we wanted to do turns out not to do them good. Our Holy Father, Pope Benedict XVI, warned us of this in his recent encyclical, Caritas in Veritate, the love or charity in truth. And he reminded us that we must be guided by the truth of the human person if we're going to do good that we want to do for someone, and not end up inadvertently harming them. We must always be guided by moral principles in order not to go astray and do harm where we meant to do good. Jesus knew that a little compromise with the devil was not going to be his ticket to saving all humanity. And so we have to reject some of those sayings that we sometimes hear, all's fair in love and war, the end justifies the means, or something like business is business. We can identify a third thread when we notice that the devil is not simply offering power, but also glory. As he says, I shall give to you all this power and their glory. And so it may be that rather than simply seeking to control people or help them in the wrong way, that instead we're looking to receive something, that we're looking to receive a sense of self-worth. And so we might be tempted to do the wrong thing in order to gain someone's approval or their esteem or their love. Not that we want to control them, but that actually we're willing to do the wrong thing in order to get them to give us the thing that we think we need from them. We do not seek to rule them so much as we willingly submit to be ruled by them. And when does this occur? In dating or in marriage? In raising children and even seeking approval from them, from others in the family? In what we do in the workplace for either employers or employees? In the kind of behavior that we do or don't do in public, in what we choose to do, for example, in politics, where we allow ourselves to be ruled by others because we think we need to get something from them that they will not give otherwise. A second of the evangelical counsels, and one that can be seen to relate to this, is chastity in perfect celibacy for the kingdom. Now, that might seem strange, and actually the linking here is more tenuous than in the other two. But maybe not as strange as it might seem on the outset. For is chastity really only about sexuality? The virtue of chastity, which in the form lived in the evangelical councils by those who make vows of religious life, chastity and perfect celibacy for the kingdom, is that form. All the rest of us are called to chastity, but according to a different form. And one way to generalize what's going on within all the different principles and rules involved in chastity is something very simple. We may say that, understood correctly, chastity is about wholeness and integrity in personal relationship. In the following way. Undergirding chastity is the recognition that we are made to engage in a unique relationship. The relationship between husband and wife, one husband, one wife, bound by vows, permanent, indissoluble, completely faithful, a complete sharing of life, each spouse giving themselves entirely, receiving the other entirely, something for the good of the spouses, and something that is ordered for the procreation and raising of children. That even for those who are within this, that still their actions must be chosen carefully. That even the marital act, sexual intercourse, is only what it should be when it is each time unitive, that is, strengthening and fostering the unity in the relationship between husband and wife, and procreative, that is, open, not seeking to block God's action in being able to create new life. Now, that's a lot of words to paint one picture. Chastity is the recognition of the specialness of that. And then in turn saying that aside from that one relationship, the totality, the completion of it, that we will not otherwise seek to take a piece from someone, nor will we go giving pieces of ourselves. That the pieces are not to be taken and they're not to be given. The whole is to be exchanged in this very, very special relationship. And outside of that whole, the pieces are not to be taken or given. Not in any ways. But that if we're not taking and giving pieces, instead, what we engage in is charity. That love that characterized Christ, that is self-giving, but not in a wrong way that lowers us, that is generous, that knows who the other is as a person, and is ready to reach out and help and give, but knows how not to confuse that with the taking or giving of pieces. If I've described that well enough, it should be clear then that on that level, the principles involved in chastity have everything to do with all the rest of our human relationships, all of their aspects. That wholeness, that respect, both for ourselves and for others, true love, true freedom. That wholeness and respect and love and freedom can be extended to all the other aspects of relationships that we perhaps don't as readily identify with chastity itself. A person who could live that out is amazing. A person who can live that out is needed. And a person who can live that out is trusted. Our saint for today, Saint Francis of Paula, lived for decades as a hermit, was famous, and towards the end of his life, and he lived till he was about 90, within the last couple decades of his life, he was sought out by different rulers. He didn't want to go. One of the stories was of how he had been called upon by the King of France to go and do something for him, and he just refused until the Pope ordered him to go, and then that he did out of obedience. But when he got there, he did not at the least knuckle under to any of the royal prerogatives. He told the king the truth he didn't want to hear, and ultimately brought the king around to the truth. How many of us could stand up to those kind of temptations of a royal court? And yet, if we can, then we end up becoming the channel of something that is desperately needed. Our Lord Jesus showed himself to be such a person. And our Lord Jesus wants to help us to grow into being such persons ourselves. A fourth thread that's perhaps not here within the passage, but that's worth mentioning, is what happens when we're wronged by someone. We know when we're wronged that we have the right to defend our safety as much as necessary, to protect the safety of those that might be in our charge as much as necessary. But to know that that goes as far as defense, not as far as vengeance, not to the point of payback for harm that has been suffered. Rather, as the whole world knows, our Lord Jesus instructs us to forgive. And we have no better example than his own prayer upon the cross, as he said, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." He calls upon us to continue to will the true good of a person who has harmed us. Not to fail to prevent them from doing further harm, if that's needed, but nevertheless, having taken those steps, to continue to will their good and to be ready to act for it when resentment would hold us back, to act for their good anyway. In a certain broader sense, it is a matter of living chastity to the degree that we can in our vocation. The Lenten discipline that relates to this is almsgiving. As we seek to actively give and do good to others. Now, we might say that there's the usual obvious forms of almsgiving, giving money to the usual people. But it is worth considering and asking ourselves, what about non-usual ways to non-usual people? Who else might need something given by us for their good? Spouses, family members, co-workers, others in business relationships, neighbors, friends. And what is it that they need? What is for their true good? Not necessarily money, but other things that may be quite ordinary, yet personal and tender and touching indeed. "All this will be yours if you worship me," Jesus said to him in reply. "It is written, you shall worship the Lord your God, and him alone shall you serve."